Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
That's right, it's Brett King. You are back with Breaking Banks, the number one fintech podcast globally. If you've been tracking our progress for Breaking Banks this year, we are getting close to near the 500,000 listeners per episode mark. So that's a pretty big thing for us. We have unique listeners, around 6.5 million unique listeners in 177 countries, which makes us dominantly the number one fintech podcast in the world. Joining me today, we've got a phenomenal show for you today. We're going to talk about Apple and the big reveal yesterday. We're going to get a sneak preview of Finovate 4 coming up in just a few weeks. But joining me today is Faisal Khan, who is going to help me host. Faisal is a banking and payments consultant. He specializes in cross-border payment systems, digital money. He's an evangelist for digital money. And he's also the co-host of another podcast called Around the Coin. It's a weekly podcast on payments and fintech with over 18,000 listeners. So Faisal, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, sir.
And you're in Istanbul today, I understand, right?
That's correct.
A really global show today. We've got guests from Singapore, UK, and so forth. We'd like to thank Salesforce for being our sponsor for today's Breaking Banks episode. Salesforce is the world's number one customer relationship management system, CRM. Their cloud-based applications for sales, service, marketing, and more don't require IT experts to set up or manage. Just log in and start connecting to your customers in a whole new way with Salesforce.com. Okay, so Faisal, what have we got in the way of conference announcements before we get to the big Apple event?
Just two from my end. So there's PayThink 2018 that's happening. It's the premier bank-focused payment forum. It's happening on the 24th to 26th of September in Austin, Texas, and you can go to paythinkforum.com. The other one is Bank AI, the future of AI in banking, 27th to 28th of September, also in Austin, Texas. And you can go to americanbanker.com/conferences to get more information.
Fantastic. And also, don't forget, we're going to be talking about this in the show today, but September 24 to 26 is Finovate Fall in New York City. They also have their additional summit day on September 27th. Chloe James, JP Nichols, Jim Marus, and myself are all going to be on stage at the summit day for the Breaking Banks Power Hour. So make sure you stay tuned for that. We'll try and get you some wrap up of that after the show and summarize Finovate for you post show, as we always do. Also, October 22nd to 25th at the International Convention Center in Sydney, I'll be there doing the opening keynote for InnerTribe. And Joe Lubin, some of you will know, the co-founder of Ethereum, he'll be on stage closing out InnerTribe on the 25th as well. While I'm in Sydney, there's going to be plenty of Bank 4.0 signings, including a special event hosted by Salesforce and Accenture on the 25th. So if you'd like more information, let me know on that, or you can check out the Financial Services Basecamp at salesforce.com. If you have something else you want us to share with our audience in respect to conferences, don't forget to hit us up on Twitter at BreakingBanks1 or email us at info@provoke.fm.
Okay, so the big tech news this week, of course, was Apple's huge event in Cupertino, California, where they launched the three new iPhones and a fourth generation Apple Watch. Here to discuss the Apple event is David Gerbino and John Noster.
Gents, welcome back to the show. Yeah, now, first of all, John, you're the number one health tech commentator globally today. You're live joining us from Google's headquarters in New York City, I understand.
Yes, I am. So I'll have to whisper when I say Apple. Brett.
Now, what did you make of the announcement? You tweeted out something around the heart health sensors and diagnostics that was the number one trending thing in respect to the Apple event. It was huge. So what's the big news about the Apple Watch in particular in respect to the heart sensors?
Well, let's start with a question. Everybody knows about the proverbial 10,000 steps. And no one really does it. No one really tracks it. Interestingly, the people who track 10,000 steps are generally the people who don't need it, people who are athletes, people who are gym rats. So the watches and the sensors and the trackers today have largely been an athletic option. And what we're seeing with Apple's move is that they're creating real, tangible clinical information that shifts the product from an athletic option to a clinical imperative. And to me, that's the big news, that we now can monitor that aspects of the EKG looking for a condition called atrial fibrillation and lead to the prevention potentially of strokes. So again, it's moving to a clinical imperative. So it's big news.
So this is not just it's not just a toy anymore for fitness freaks. It's now got real clinical application. That's what you're saying.
And the clinical use is validated by the FDA. So absolutely, these are no longer novelties. These are the first steps forward in adopting the quantified self, the real digital health reality that's looming in the future. Some people may say that this is not critical, it's not essential, but for me, I think it's really an important step forward. We're beginning to establish these simple tools, wearables, as clinical tools that empower both the patient and the physician.
It's an obvious trend, isn't it, that as the sensors get cheaper and more capable, and more data is available for diagnostician purposes or diagnostics purposes, clearly more data is better. And they actually had a doctor come on the Apple stage to talk about how he might use the Apple Watch data, which I thought was fascinating. Now, Mr. Jabino, Dave, what did you think of the event? What struck you as the highlights of the new tech that Apple launched?
All right, so through the lens of love the fact that they broadcast it live on Twitter, and I have to put a little disclaimer out there. I'm a loyal Android user, so I'm watching hardware envy.
Right.
But just to build on what John was saying, when we have certain medical crises, all the data that's being captured is lagging information. It's after the event. And so we're entering that part of the world where we're going to have leading indicators and those leading health indicators from a diagnostic standpoint that we didn't have before. And, that's why I concur. That is just huge. But for me, just watching the change from the A12 Bionic, from the A11 to the A12, just a massive change of power and capability. It was something like, hundreds of billions to single digit trillions of operations per second. That's huge. The way they marry all their hardware together and their new core ML2 chip for machine learning capabilities, doing it all locally. And these are just all things that when I take that step back and think, what are all the things now that developers are going to be able to do? Things that they learned from the last generation, but now that there's more phones with these capabilities to be able to change the envelope and sort of reinvent the whole app ecosystem in a whole different paradigm. It's not machine learning in the cloud anymore. We're doing it locally, or maybe models are built in the cloud but then rolled out locally on the machine on the phones, which gets rid of a lot of latency. So I'm just expecting a lot of power and different changes in the apps that we're using today, just across the board.
I find that
is fascinating.
Yeah, I particularly like the way they do, their explainer videos with Jony Ive, where they actually will reveal the tech inside the camera or, the watch, crown or things like that, where they actually sort of explode that out to show you the tech. They're packing in huge amounts of tech into these devices today, aren't they?
Yeah, and it really is unprecedented. And, oftentimes we get very jaded that, these devices aren't, any different from a previous generation. But it's, all moving to the screen technology, which is something we actually do see. But just the actual power, When you think about the change,
processing speed,
from, you know, when you look at the life of the iPhone and the power of the chips versus, you know, a similar period of time in PC computing, or even go back in time to what we saw in mainframe, it's just really fascinating.
Well, the comparison I like to make is of the Apollo guidance computer that took Neil Armstrong to the moon. So given the 5 trillion transistors that they're talking about in the current chip for the iPhone, that's the equivalent of about 10 million times the processing power of the Apollo guidance computer. It's crazy. So, hey, all right. So, Faisal, you had a question about the sensor data on the watch for John.
Yes, I'm just wondering if all this sensor data, you know, the cloud is collecting all this data, albeit, you know, barring the privacy issues, et cetera. Would there be a situation where they could preempt that, you know, such and such person is now going to be getting a heart attack or something because the signature matches it or something like that? You know, because they'll be collecting massive amounts of data.
Sure. The answer is yes and no, but an emphasis on yes, because what we're seeing now is the collection of real-time data has prognostic significance. We all know the Kevin Bacon story and the 6 degrees of separation. What we're seeing now is the 6 degrees of connection, and it's actually going from 6 degrees to 5 degrees to 4 degrees. And we're looking at the EKG as this wellspring of information. For example, atrial fibrillation is one condition that we're looking at, but also the difference between the R wave, the RR interval, the heart rate variability is being studied now, and we're finding very, very interesting things to see there about clinical events. The other one which is interesting is this terminal wave on the EKG. It's called the T wave. And what the T wave is, it's a big funny shaped bump at the end of your EKG, but we're seeing now that we can look at that and determine abnormalities in your electrolytes, particularly with potassium. The competing company to Apple is AliveCor. AliveCor did a lot of the early work with Dr. Dave Albert.
I want to come back to the AliveCor thing, but yeah, keep going, John. Sorry.
I think that what we're seeing is that this is opening the door to a vast amount of data that will lead to both scientific exploration and real important, clinical endpoints. So that's why I think this is important. The device itself, given its power, is important, but opening the door to patient-centric technologies that look at the deep, dark secrets of our cardiovascular physiology is really amazing.
Just in terms of that tech, you know, AliveCor really did pioneer that. They had the Apple Watch band that you could marry with the earlier versions of the Apple Watch to get similar data. How do you think AliveCor feels about Apple coming in and just incorporating this directly in the phone now?
They didn't reply to my text. I reached out. I was just on a panel with Dave Albert, the innovator, and they were very excited about the potassium measurement that they're doing now, and I think they looked at that as a way to sort of get around this. But there's still the AliveCor device that you hold in your hand. Remember, everybody doesn't want a fancy and expensive Apple Watch.
Right.
So we still have another option. And to me, a rising tide lifts all ships. So at first blush, we may say that, well, you know, Apple, the tech giant is going to crush AliveCor. I don't think that's exactly the case. I think that this will grow the market.
No, because the sensors can be put in clothes and all sorts of things. It doesn't have to just go in Apple devices, right?
Completely. They're kind of bringing it to the forefront in a watch that's, you know, it's $100 more now, so it's expensive. But if I'm a 60 or 70 year old man or woman who has, I'm at risk of atrial fibrillation, I don't know if I want to go out and get a fancy Apple Watch. It doesn't fit my lifestyle. I'm much happier with a small handheld device that I can keep in my wallet or in my pocket and use as the regular smartphone.
Yeah, very true. Now, Dave, what did you think of the enhancements they've made to the camera, particularly the use of the neural technologies, neural net technologies built on chip for doing things like bokeh effect and things like that?
In one word, or maybe it's two words, I was blown away. And this is the battle I like that I believe I'm seeing between Google and Apple. You know, Google's doing it on a single lens. Apple's showcasing it on a dual lens system. Oh, and then they showed their lower end phone. And I'm saying that kind of snarky, with a single lens that does the exact same thing. And that's where I was really impressed, because I was not expecting them to bring that same capability to the single lens piece, which means they're doing it all in software. And in that, you know, in that regard, they just outdid Google. And so now I'm really hoping that when we actually see a Pixel phone, Google come out and see if they can maintain par with Apple. Part of me doesn't think they can take the lead again in that regard. And that's the part that's just fascinating, how just pushing the envelope there. You know, the smart HDR stuff, I've seen other companies' technology doing that or attempting to do that for the last several years, and I'm really happy to see somebody actually bringing that together, because that's one of the challenges with some of the HDR photos that I've taken, where I've analyzed individual frames and seeing a lot of the blur. So the fact that if Apple is using their AI stack with their, you know, tied in with their photo capabilities to really maintain that sharpness and all the other benefits of HDR, again, just another leg up of technology that's been brewing for the last several years, now coming to fruition in a very common consumer device.
Yeah, the software is the processing capabilities. The fact that it can do this in real time as you're taking the photo, and you can play with aperture settings and stuff like that, all software based, is just incredible. Well, software and the CCD sensor, I guess, I guess what they still call it now. I don't know what the sensor is called in the camera sensor. But hey, John, what about in terms of the iPhone releases? Was there anything there that you saw that had some potential for the health tech arena?
For me, I think that it's really incorporating the technology into conventional existing technologies, and I like telemedicine, because I think that the big connection here is the watch and the phone working together to sort of recreate, if you will, the modern house call. And, you know, we all look back at the good old days when the doctor would come to your house and check you. Well, the doctor can come to your house now using this technology. So I wouldn't be surprised if you could see in some kind of interesting way the pairing of the phone and the watch so you can become a little mini laboratory that lives in your house.
Yeah, I had one of my staff at Movin the other day tell me that he had his first visit with a doctor via his phone, where he was diagnosed with poison ivy condition, but it had happened all remotely via the phone. So these services are starting to emerge. It makes perfect sense, doesn't it? So,
absolutely.
All right, So how did you guys think the Apple team generally performed in the Steve Jobs Theater? What are your guys' thoughts about their ability to put on a show in the new spaceship headquarters? Dave?
Okay.
All right, so overall, I was very, I don't like the jokey stuff in the beginning. To me, that's just a waste of time. I want to see him come in and just go get started. But again, that's just a nitpick. You know, overall, it's just, you know, when you look at their events, you just sit there, and when you break it down and analyze it that way, you're just seeing the best of the best, and it really is, it was an enjoyable show. And, you know, I really like the fact that, like I had already said, they put it out there on Twitter. And then when it was laggy, and eventually I wasn't in real time anymore, and I was delayed by a number of seconds, but it just really allows them to draw in many more people, and they intersperse it with all their advertising. But it's just building, you know, the cult of Apple, and it's something that they've been doing, since I had my first Apple II. I mean, that cult building has been going on, and I'm not saying it in a negative light, but in more in a positive light. It's just you know, they're building their ecosystem and continually building it with every, you know, every word, every image, every video, and I'm just impressed.
And I think
it wasn't to an iPhone, but very, very close.
I don't think that it was superfluous. I think it was a brand as hero, taking a remarkable product and demonstrating it beautifully. So I think that, you know, from a Steve Jobsian perspective, I think it was spot on.
Yeah, I do think they really have that fine-tuned machine now in terms of, you know, how they could, you know, put it all together. It's very polished, isn't it? And certainly that's Steve's attention to detail which sort of set the benchmark there, I think.
Completely. I just wonder if eventually it becomes a parody of itself. You know,
people are already parodying these events, aren't they?
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, hey, John and Dave, yep. Thanks for joining us on the show to give us a bit of an update on the Apple event today. We really appreciate it. And and say hello to the folks at Google headquarters for us, John.
I certainly will. Chat soon, guys. Take care.
Yeah, take care. See you.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Dave. All right. So, very, very interesting. If you haven't checked out the new iPhone, of course, you can go to apple.com or the new watch and check it out there. But what you can also do is you can watch the replays of the live event. There was certainly a lot of commentary that occurred in parallel for this. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there. All right, so let's introduce our next guest. Greg Palmer is the vice president and host of Finovate. This is Finovate's a demo-first fintech conference with annual events that take place in New York, London, Hong Kong, Silicon Valley, Cape Town, and Dubai. They specialize in, Greg specializes in fintech, of course, but he's best known for his role as the MC or the host of Finovate. So he's also has a second career as a public speaker, demo coaching, marketing, business development, and event planning. He's back on Breaking Banks to give us a glimpse of what's happening at Finovate Fall in New York City from the 24th to 26th of September. And then after the break, we'll be talking to a couple of the teams demoing at Finovate in New York. But Greg, welcome back to the show, first of all.
Yeah, thanks, Brett. Pleasure.
So you guys have been at this for a while. To give some historical context, Finovate started back in 2007. Now, you guys got together a small group of 20 companies or so to do some demos to the fintech and tech community out in Silicon Valley. But included in that inaugural Finovate gathering were such names as Lending Club, Prosper, Mint. You know, we're talking sort of fintech royalty here in terms of unicorns that are out there. Obviously, quite a bit of fintech water under the bridge since then. It's 2018, 11 years later. We've got all sorts of records being broken in respect to investment in fintech. So, you know, tell us, how are things shaping up for Finovate Fall?
Sure. Well, the show's coming together really nicely. And one of the pieces I'm spending a lot of time right now is actually coaching up a lot of the presenters who are going to be on stage. And I just want to take a moment and highlight that quote that just came out. I don't like that jokey stuff in the beginning. I think it's a waste of time. If there are any Finovate presenters who are
Jabino.
Listening to that. Okay. take that to heart. I think, you know, we talk about it on the coaching calls. I just couldn't let that opportunity go past. But the presenters are looking really good, and some of the things we're really excited by, 60% of our companies who will be on stage are new to Finovate this time. Almost half of them have been founded after 2015. So you talk about, you know, where we were in 2007 and then fully 8 years later, still almost half of the companies we're going to see this year hadn't even been formed yet. And we've got a whopping 60% who are launching new companies or new products at the show. The remainder are coming, you know, expanding their business into the U.S. But it's shaping up really nicely. And this is always the fun part for me, where I get to start to see the demos come together on these coaching calls, get a sense of how the show is going to look. And I'm really excited to see how everything actually pulls together on the day of.
I want to talk about the demos in a little minute. But before we get to that, How has Finovate changed in terms of its format and its structure over the last 11 years?
Sure. So, you know, initially we were obviously just a much smaller show. We were a one-day show. And over time, we expanded to 2 days, but kept the focus on that demo-only side of things. And we've tried to be true to that. I'm a firm believer in the value of a seven-minute demo, no PowerPoint slides, no canned video, as being the most effective way to really quickly see technology, decide if you're interested in it, and you can make that decision if you want to go and connect with the people who are offering that technology for you. So that piece hasn't changed dramatically over the last little bit. But we've been able to start adding some new pieces, some things following on with the demos. And one of the things that we've noticed, you know, over the course of doing this for so long, we've developed a lot of relationships with people who are really experts, very intelligent in their space. And we now have the opportunity to put those people up on stage. You don't necessarily have to be demoing a product in order to have something worthwhile to say. And so we like to be able to take that third day now and focus on some more higher level takeaways, where the industry is going. You know, we can get into some specific subject matter dives and things like that. And this fall, for the first time, is actually really exciting for us. We've got a huge number of financial institutions who are going to be taking part in that third discussion day. So we'll be hearing from HSBC, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, US Bank, BB&T, TD Ameritrade, and Citi Ventures, among many others. But to be able to put those types of people and companies up on stage sharing some of the experience that they've had, best practices, and just wisdom from working in the space is really exciting for us. It's something we didn't used to be able to do, but now with our expanded format, we're able to incorporate that content.
Very cool.
Very quick question. Do you plan to take this live in any manner? Because, you know, 2007, 2008, you didn't have live, you know, you didn't have live video coverage, etc. But now with the live technology, do you plan to take it worldwide on a worldwide stage? You can demo from anywhere in the world?
You know, we've played around with the idea. It's something that we constantly kick around, especially as we've started doing shows in different parts of the world. You know, if Finovate continues to be a major global player, we will have presenters from five continents up on stage this fall. The only two that we're missing are Australia and Antarctica. So certainly, you know, it speaks to the global nature of fintech innovation, the global reach of Finovate, which is something we're very proud of. In terms of what we want to do from a live broadcasting standpoint, we still feel pretty confident that a lot of the value comes from actually coming and meeting with people face to face. And our concern is that if you start to broadcast live, do you ruin some of that uniqueness of having all those people in the same room? Is there a way to replicate that in a remote way? So we're definitely exploring the options, but as of right now, we don't have any concrete plans.
Gotcha.
I know we're coming up to break time in a couple of minutes, but you've also introduced the summit day. So, you know, you talked about that a little bit, but what specifically is of interest on the summit day this year, or for Finovate 4?
Yeah, so the summit day this year will be the fourth day of the show, and we tried out a four-day format. We found out it was a little too long for most attendees, and so we've scaled it back now to just 3 days. But we wanted to have this summit where we talk specifically about AI and about blockchain, because these are two really exciting areas within fintech at the moment, and they really do warrant that kind of deep dive. So rather than try and cram some of that content into an already packed 3 days, we decided to separate it out, offer it on a fourth day for people who are really interested in it. So it is technically distinct from Finovate Fall. If you like, you can just come for the summit day, although obviously you can come for all 4 days. But we'll really be diving into those two subject areas intensively, and it's going to be a first for us. So we're going to obviously be collecting feedback on it, see how it goes. But we kind of like the idea of being able to give people who want it that deeper level dive, not necessarily expecting every attendee to stick around for all 4 days.
Okay, so last question before the break. You know, this kicks off a pretty busy period for you guys. After Finovate Fall in September, what's the schedule look like for you?
So we'll be going on the road, taking outside the U.S. We've got Finovate Asia coming up in Hong Kong. We're a part of Hong Kong's FinTech Week there, which is really exciting for us. We'll be kicking off on the Monday and Tuesday of that October 29th and 30th. Then we will be heading to Cape Town for the first time for Finovate Africa, which is a place that we've been monitoring for a long time, looking at the amazing innovations coming out of there. Then we'll pop over to London for Finovate Europe in February, and we're looking to come back to Dubai for Finovate Middle East in the middle of the spring in 2019. So quite a bit of different places that we'll be heading. Again, emphasizing that global nature of where fintech is. We want to be wherever fintech innovation happens, and so we'll be racking up a fair amount of frequent flyer miles in the meantime.
Whereabouts in Africa?
Cape Town. And okay. In case anybody's wondering, they do actually have water again. I've been monitoring that situation really closely. As you can imagine, these are the types of things that can drive conference organizers a little bit batty.
So before we go on the break, this show is brought to you by Movin. Movin is the creator of the world's first mobile downloadable bank account. In 2013, Movin launched, you know, with the very first bank account sign-up enabled mobile app. And in 2013, they launched the world's first contactless sticker for use in the United States and were one of the first neobank or challenger banks globally. Today, in addition to powering a digital bank in the U.S., they license their technology to banks all around the world, including TD Bank, Westpac, BCA in Indonesia, Yandex Money in Russia, and more. Go to movin.com, that's moven.com, or movinenterprise.com to find out more.
Great. Well, it's time to take a short break, and we'll be right back with more Breaking Banks.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Now, before we get back to talking about fintech, I want to take a quick moment to tell you about eFinancialCareers.com, one of the supporters of the show. They're the world's leading career site for financial service professionals for over 15 years. eFinancialCareers.com partners with leading financial and fintech firms, so your resume is seen by all the top companies and recruiters in the U.S. and abroad. Now, as we all know, financial services is a very dynamic, ever-changing industry, and eFinancial Careers provides valuable resources from helpful career coaching to interview strategies and tools that keep you up to speed and well-informed with what's happening now in the industry and what it means for your career. Registration's free for financial professionals. Make sure you take advantage of all the resources they have to offer. So check them out, eFinancialCareers.com.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I am your host, Brett King. I'm joined today by Faisal Khan, who's helping me co-host. He also runs his own podcast called Around the Coin. And the second half of today's show is sponsored by Provoke Management. Provoke is the speaker management firm that manages all the major fintech talent around the world, including such notables as our frequent guest, Jim Morales, JP Nichols, Dave Birch, Chloe James, and many more. If you want to check out Provoke Management, you can follow them on Twitter. Their Twitter ID is at Provoke MGMT, the abbreviation for management, at Provoke Management. So check that out. All right. So one of the companies demoing at Finovate this year is called Bucket Technologies. So I'll ask Greg for a little bit more info on the selection process for demo companies in a little while. But before that, let's talk to one of the companies demoing at Finovate, Bucket Technologies. Their mission, says on their homepage, is to accelerate the world into the digital economy powered by blockchain. It was designed from the ground up to bring an end to the hassle of coins. So this is part of their target for what they want to accomplish. They say it's easy. Pay with cash, say bucket the change, and your coins are swept into a digital bucket account. And joining us all the way from Singapore is the CEO and founder of Bucket, Francis Huang. Actually, I forgot to check. Are you actually in Singapore today, Francis?
I am not. I am actually in Ohio picking up my Airstream.
Oh, there you go. Now, you do spend some time, obviously, in the U.S. You holiday in the Ozarks, I understand.
I do. I'm actually primarily based out of the U.S. in Arkansas. Moved here about a year ago. Our MD, our managing director of Asia, is based in Singapore and Hong Kong. His name is Mac Ling. And then Dan and I, who are the co-founders, we're back and forth between Asia all the time.
Have you had a chance to check out the Netflix special on the Ozarks?
Yes, I'm actually a big fan of it.
And you're going anyway?
As long as I keep the mess away, then I should be fine.
I was going to ask if your effort to remove coins was tied into some sort of money laundering operation there, but we won't get into that anyway. Okay, now it says in your bio, Francis, that you came up with the concept for Bucket 10 years ago. So I guess, you know, what was the vision? What you know, 10 years ago, what was it that made you think of this?
Yeah, so I'd say that it's very different from what it was 10 years ago. But essentially, 10 years ago, I was coming off of a research project. We were outsourced to quantify some data on behalf of the Federal Reserve in San Francisco. And my team happened to be focused on energy input into fiat currencies, et cetera. And we came to some pretty shocking outcomes, mainly because we just don't really think about coins. We tend to gravitate towards bills because they're worth more. But the findings were that coins are by far the cost dominant asset within the cash category. And they're a losing proposition literally from materials mining all the way through to consumer use. So 10 years ago, I tried to create a system, integrate with POS systems, allow them a retailer storefront businesses to facilitate coinless cash transactions. But the conclusion sometime in 2004 was that, you know, POS machines were not all intelligent, were not all ubiquitously connected to the internet. Most of them were pretty much offline machines. And the sort of lifestyle and attachment to smartphones, the ubiquity of smartphones, certainly hadn't reached a mature stage yet. So in essence, I shelved it, and in 2016, I was doing some, you know, dusting off of old research projects, came across this, jumped back into some research, reached out to some contacts at the World Bank and Central Bank of Europe and Federal Reserve, and then when I looked at the technology maturation at the POS level, at the consumer level, thought that you know, Bucket was really the time right now to get it going.
So Francis, let me ask you, were you waiting for the blockchain or do you plan to use the blockchain? And moreover, tell us how it works. What does it do?
Yeah, so we definitely are. About a year ago, we fully came to the consensus in the company to pivot into
no pun intended.
Company. So the blockchain really works in two fronts. So, you know, to premise all of this, I am an absolute avid believer that blockchain is going to be the future. I do believe that companies with digital assets that are not tokenized on the blockchain will be the equivalent of a company in 1998 saying that they don't need, you know, a website to represent their business. So that aside, we're really utilizing blockchain on two levels. The first is we've done away with all of the sort of internal corporate finance and governance. We've tokenized our net income, And we've layered a malleable smart contract above. That's sort of, for lack of a better word. In essence, if that smart contract will protect the retained earnings of the company, ensure that the company and the project has the resources to continue growing and ramping on its roadmap. But if other variables are hit, profit distributions are automatically issued to all of our security token holders. So these are the investors that are backing the project. We are building that security token on the Stellar blockchain. That allows our international investors and whatnot to have better access to liquidity much quicker. The second aspect of our blockchain usage is actually my sort of really, really big intrigue. I sort of left my research off at somewhere around this stage, and the opportunity to build this into our business offering has been great. So essentially, what we believe is that stable coins are a very important evolutionary step for cryptocurrencies. You know, to be able to buy a Snickers bar today at the same amount of crypto that you buy a Snickers bar tomorrow is actually way more important than most people would think. What Bucket offers is a way to tap into the cash user user base, which is essentially every person on this planet at least multiple times a year, and start introducing them to cryptocurrencies, which, you know, for all of the philosophical reasons, put the power back in their hand in an innocuous way. So instead of saying, hey, go to your checking account and buy Bitcoin for, you know, 6,000 plus per Bitcoin, now what you can do is essentially every time you bucket your change, we create a stably backed USD pegged cryptocurrency that is directly reflecting the bucketed change that you've created. This, you know, if you want, once you cross the $50 threshold in our piggy bank model, you can still choose to, you know, direct deposit the $50 to your bank, load a gift card, donate to charity. But you'll also have a Bucks coin, which is the stably backed coin that we will mint when you bucket your change. And essentially that gives you now a new avenue to arbitrage into Ethereum, Bitcoin, and explore the world of blockchain. From an industry perspective, you know, what this represents, what Bucket could represent, is a huge influx of new users and liquidity into the space, which I believe is desperately needed. And, you know, liquidity may sound kind of oxymoronish, given the fact that we're talking about pennies, nickels, and dimes, but there's $500 billion in coins in real-time circulation, which is, you know, more than 2x the entire crypto space combined. So we want to capture that and build a bridge from cash to crypto and sort of help accelerate the space.
Well, I'm sure our second guest is going to have some more to add on that as well. What did you think about the announcement by the Winklevoy this week regarding the Gemini stablecoin?
Yeah, you know, my thoughts on a lot of the stablecoins today, and this is inclusive of Gemini, Tether, USDC, is that there only is one purpose for a stablecoin today, and that's for use by traders, right? So when you look at the Gemini coin, they're only marketing it to traders because they're the only ones that have use for it, right? For us, what we want to do is essentially bring in a whole net new user base, which is cash users. I think that's the step that needs to happen within stablecoins for it to be used as a medium of exchange. And I believe, really, at the end of the day, there are a lot of variations of stablecoins, but the immovable fact is that it is supposed to service a medium of exchange.
All right. So what about your demo at Finovate? What are you planning on demonstrating?
Yeah, we're going to do the whole experience. So we've designed Bucket to really be as simple as like 1, 2, 3. You ask them to bucket the change, we handle the rest. So on stage, we'll have a POS system. Someone will come pay for something with cash, and we will show not only the consumer app and how it works, but also the retail POS and how that works as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, you know, what do they hope to get out of it by demoing at Finovate?
That's a good question. I think, you know, right now for the past year and a half, We've spent the first year of the business in stealth mode building the technology. I think since we've rolled out and from a technology standpoint been able to verify that we can conduct a bucket transaction in the wild, it's really to then begin building advocacy. Advocacy at the governmental level, at the retail level, at the banking level. So for the past year, that's really been our focus. I think Finovate is a really great platform for us to do that. And we are a free service. So that's the important thing to remember for everybody is that to banks, to retailers, to consumers, it costs nothing. Our mission is we designed our business development in partnership with Sutton Bank in Ohio, which is the bank for Square and Square Cash, and essentially worked out a deal where we get a stable revenue source based on how well we perform, which means how many coins we're stemming and what we're doing all upstream in the life cycle of coins.
Okay. So another company that is demoing is Crypterium. Crypterium app is making cryptocurrencies a part of your everyday life. They're turning coins, and coins seems to be the gravity, you know, hero, and tokens into money that you can spend wherever and whenever you want. Mark O'Brien is the CEO joining us today. Mark was the former CEO of Visa UK. He is also a key advisor to the Challenger Bank Revolut. Mark, how are you?
Hi, Faisal. I'm great, thank you. And hi, Brett. Thanks for having me on Breaking Banks today.
Glad to have you on. So this year, we've had more than 500 new token issues, raising more than $14 billion so far in funding. So where do you guys slot into this ecosystem in terms of Crypterium?
At Crypterium. So we're one of the few companies, I guess, at Finovate that is not looking for anyone's money. We did a ICO back in November. We raised $52 million. And so we've got the funds to really bring our product to market globally in many use cases. And the reason we want to go to Finovate is, for me, I've always seen Finovate as a badge of honor. I've been there with Revolut, as you mentioned before. I'm no longer an advisor with them. I'm full-time with Crypterium. But I see Finovate as one of those really important badges for a company to really sharpen up its sales pitch and in just 7 minutes tell the story of what your products and strategy is all about.
And, you know, what are you actually going to be demoing at Finovate?
So in terms of the demo, as Greg said earlier, it's all about the products. It's all about the proposition that you've got and showcasing it. And so we are showcasing our live service that we have now. And we are going to add many more use cases coming up. But the ones that we'll show, for any of our customers anywhere in the world, they can register with our service, go through a very short KYC process, and be able to do mobile top-ups. So for anywhere in the world, whether it's a developing economy like Kenya, you will be able to use the Crypterium app, have crypto, and do a mobile top-up with crypto. And it's part of our strategy for being fully global. The other services that are actually more strategic for us in terms of volume is to enable all of our customers with crypto to be able to send crypto to their contacts in just 1 second. Basically, in the Bitcoin folder that you have, select your contacts, select that contact, select the amount, and send crypto to them. They will get the crypto in a Crypterium account themselves directly. They'll get an SMS message if they don't already have an account, and all they have to do is download the service, and they will receive crypto. And I think it's going to be a really good way for virally growing the audience of crypto users. And there are different numbers, but the numbers that I've kind of looked into is that there's 25 million unique crypto wallets today, crypto users today. And that doesn't compare at all to the 3 billion Visa and MasterCard card holders. And so this is a really good use case for inviting your friends, send some crypto to people you know to experiment with it and start to become familiar with it in a very easy to use way. The two other use cases that I just want to mention are we are going to attach a card. And we are working with the Visas and MasterCards and UnionPays to bring to our customers globally the opportunity to use the 16 digits in e-commerce to make e-commerce payments. And if the customers want a plastic card, they can have a plastic card too.
What's it based on? Is it on the Ethereum blockchain, or is it on some bespoke version or forked version?
So what we talk about our business in kind of three segments. The first is that we have a hot wallet for all the major cryptocurrencies, and we're looking to add many more over time. So we've got Bitcoin, Litecoin, and Ether. So customers can load those, and so we deal with the crypto community. Secondly, we have a liquidity and FX platform that means we're able to make instant payments into the fiat world. And so we then have a bridge into fiat. So all of the merchants that want to accept fiat for IBAN transfers, ACH as you might call it in the US, we're able to fund the liquidity and make instant payments from crypto to fiat. And then the last part is our own token. And our own tokens, the CRPT token, we have essentially tokenized the service that we have. So when a customer wants to make a transaction, they need our CRPT tokens as gas for the transaction. And that's where our customers will use our utility tokens to make payments.
How many users do you have on your system today? And how many countries are you live in?
So we have 450,000 registered interested people around the world that really want the service, and by country and by region we're delivering those services. So we have 72,000 token holders, and in terms of active users, we went live 4 weeks ago, and we've been working in a mode of no promotion and no marketing as we get ready to really scale our product and our service. We have a few thousand customers that are essentially moved from beta to live, and as we iron out all of those use cases, and they'll be ready for Finovate in just 1.5 weeks time, we will start to push the marketing.
Hey, just a quick one, Mark. You used to work for Visa, so give me put your futurist hat on. When do you think, first question, when will be the end of Visa and MasterCard issuing actual plastic cards, and associated with that, when do you see the end of a 16-digit PAN?
Wow. I worked with Visa and MasterCard for many, many years, and they've got amazing business models that have really succeeded in the major developing economies. But they still have a huge opportunity in the developing markets, and there's such a huge opportunity to displace cash. And actually, the displacement of cash onto cards means that payments go digital. And the opportunity for us at Crypterium is to ride that wave towards digital payments, bridge the crypto fiat gap, and start to migrate customers across. So, I mean, for me, my reasons for changing from Visa into the fintech community 4 years ago is I wanted to be at the leading edge of digital, be at the beginning of a company, leverage my payments experience. And in the last year, it's to get into the crypto space, because I see the crypto space going mainstream and really soon. We're seeing a doubling in the number of users of crypto every year, and I think that geometric progression is going to continue.
In terms of
the end of Visa and MasterCard, they've probably got another 20 years.
Not the end of Visa and MasterCard, but the end of plastic,
okay, yeah. Well,
because they could evolve, but give me a guess. 2035.
The plastic card could disappear when everybody has a smartphone, but until that day, I'd say you're looking at 20 years.
All right, fair enough. All right, so thanks, Mark, for joining us today. Hey, Greg, can you just give us a little bit of background on why you selected these two companies to highlight for the Finovate Fall, and how that leads into your selection process for demo companies?
Sure. Yeah. Well, and it certainly wasn't just because I thought they were going to say nice things about Finovate, but I certainly do appreciate it, Mark. What I really wanted to highlight here, we've got two companies that you could describe as being part of the same buckets. You could call both of them point of sale, cryptocurrency plays, and yet there's quite a difference between each of them. And this is one of those things that we talk about at Finovate all the time. People always ask me, what are the hot trends? What are the areas that you're seeing some really exciting stuff happen in? And there's a tendency on the part of people to want to put innovations into buckets. And we always look at Finovate to try and push back against
no
that
pun
because
intention.
There's no,
intended.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
But we try and fight against that because there's so much uniqueness, even among companies who on paper can appear very similar. And so what you saw was two companies that, if you were doing your pre-Finovate homework, you would probably have put together and say these are very similar. You didn't see that today. You saw two companies very different. And of course, when you start to expand into things like payments or security or things like that, there's even more variation there. So with this group, the diversity that you can see there is something we really wanted to highlight. And you'll see a lot more of that at Finovate Fall, even among companies that can look similar on paper. So
fantastic.
There's always diversity, and it's always fun to see what they actually get up there with their 7 minutes.
Fantastic. Well, Mark and Francis and Greg, thanks for joining us and giving us a sneak preview, a trailer of what's happening at Finovate. And also, Faisal, thank you for once again helping me host on the show today.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. So that's it for this week. We appreciate all your feedback and suggestions. That's how we get ideas for the show. So hit us up on Twitter at BreakingBanks1 or email us at info@provoke.fm. If you're interested in sponsoring a show, let us know. If you want to sponsor a show or a segment, drop us a line as well. Before you jump to your next podcast, though, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform. If you don't use a podcast, if you're listening to us on the live stream at Voice America or one of the AM stations we support, then give us a shout out through social media, link to the show, breakingbanks.com. We'd really appreciate it. That's it for the show this week. We will see you guys next week with another Breaking Banks live from New York City.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.